Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center. So glad to have you today on Both Sides of the Aisle on the political left. Shireen Gorbani.
Hello, and hi, listeners. So glad you're sticking with us.
And on the political right, we have the Utah House of Representatives in the studio. Shireen, Ryan Wilcox.
Hey, Ryan Wilcox. Nice to be here.
Good to have you. I want to start, Shireen, just we'll go to you because you know this topic so well, but the Arizona Supreme Court has revived this 1864 law banning abortion. I guess it's a historic ruling, something to the effect that this law was thought about before it was a state. Give us the background.
Yeah, so I'm happy to give the background. I also just always want to give the immediate context. So I want to make sure that Utah listeners continue to know that abortion is legal to 18 weeks in this state. We are bordering Arizona, which is why this is important. Arizona is a state that had really has had quite a arcane law, 1864, on the books. And this is a law, when we think about what we understand about medicine now and what we knew then, for that reason alone, I would hope that the leaders across both parties would be able to call together some sense and immediately work to erase this law from the record. But in fact, a judge decision meant that it went into place. Now, my understanding is that the court has stayed this decision for a short period of time, about 2 weeks. And their attorney general, who is a Democrat, has said that she will not enforce this arcane law. Hmm. So there are lots of things happening right now, but it is really part of, I just want people to understand the chaos that this brings for people who are seeking an abortion. But even beyond that, when you think about being pregnant in these states and what it means to have, in this case, a law that was written so long ago, there aren't even exceptions really at all for miscarriage or anything.
Yeah.
So to understand pregnancy complications, all of those things, it instantly became more dangerous to be a pregnant person in this state.
Ryan, so it's a 160-year-old law, predates Arizona statehood, and was passed decades before women had the vote. That kind of caught my attention.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't even know how to, you know, honestly, to be totally fair, I haven't read the ruling. I'm sitting here trying to think of whether or not, you know, what happened to the territorial laws that Utah had before statehood. I assume that we just adopted those into code, but the line that I read, the headline that I read, is that the Supreme Court reinstated this, which means that it wasn't in effect, it wasn't recognized, it wasn't being practiced under for 160 years, theoretically. You know, how does that even work? How does that? This isn't even about the policy. This is about resurrect a bill from before the state existed.
Yeah. Let's do one more national issue that I think is interesting. This is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
FISA.
Yeah.
it doesn't roll off the tongue. But we've got it kind of bumping back and forth in the House, where some far-right conservatives are blocking the legislation. I think it's creating a lot of trouble for the embattled House Speaker Mike Johnson. Do you want to comment on that, Ryan?
Yeah, I would take it out. I don't believe that this is a far right problem. I'm sure you're not surprised to hear that. But you know, honestly, warrantless surveillance should be a concern for all of us. It really should. One of the first bills that I ran in this space was in 2014, and we ran it because we had some of our own guys that were the bad actors in our backyards collecting. They're setting up fake cell towers and collecting all the things. They'd have one legitimate warrant, and then they'd gather up everybody else's data because they couldn't sort through it. And then they would come to me when I asked the question, and they would say, but look at all these other bad guys we caught. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that's the difference between us and totalitarian regimes. Mm-hmm. And so when I hear it framed like that, it just makes me cringe a little inside, because it really shouldn't have anything to do with where any of us are on the political spectrum. A little bit like the process thing I just argued a minute ago on the other issue, right? It should have everything to do with, do we believe in the Fourth Amendment? And if we do, then surely we can expect the government to follow the warrant requirement that's in it itself. So if the argument's about the warrant,
This might be an area of agreement.
This is an area of agreement for us. Okay. And I think about it a lot in relation back to the Patriot Act, which we like never talk about anymore either, right?
Mm-hmm. Been a long time.
But the ways in which people's privacy, and I mean, I think about this broadly, certainly, again, referencing back to the previous issue. But when we think about people's privacy and their ability to be surveilled or unsurveilled in this country, I would very much fall in line with you on this. I agree. It's too much.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I thought this is just one another national issue, but I was driving in downtown Salt Lake this week and I'm flipping through the channels. I hear KSL and Boyd Matheson's program.
Sure.
I hear him say, well, Mr. Speaker, what do you think about this? And I'm expecting to hear Mike Schultz's, you know, voice. And I'm like, my goodness, this is Mike Johnson.
Right.
I thought that was pretty cool to have the Speaker of the House on local radio programming. Did either of you hear the interview?
I did not hear the interview, no. But I've been traveling.
Okay. Well, you know, it was with Celeste Malloy. And, you know, an election year, and I wondered if he's doing a little favor there. But Boyd Matheson and Inside Sources, you know, got us the Speaker of the House, and he's embattled, Shireen. I mean, how do you read what he's going through right now?
Oh, the Speaker of the Johnson.
Yeah.
So it's not good, but I do think it's indicative of problems that we're seeing in the Republican Party over and over and over again. So this is certainly what led to the downfall, demise, challenges of Kevin McCarthy. But like before that, think about John Boehner. I mean, this is like series.
This
is a pattern of behavior. And I think it's difficult when you have people that come from just really diverse, honestly, districts, some that are fighting for their political lives, right? Others that are in deep red districts, and it benefits them to be even more outlandish, more outspoken, more far right, more extremist. So when you're trying to hold that coalition together, I'm certain that there are challenges that feel insurmountable. But I also just feel like the entire system of the way our Congress is built leads to this kind of dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
I mean the ways in which often, you know, money cycles of funding, fundraising, the extreme partisanship that we have, the fact that we have many gerrymandered districts that are far right or far left, and very few that are actually competitive in the center. I think if we had more fair districts, we had less influence of corporate involvement in our politics, less corporate money in our politics, I think that we would see people who are more interested in trying to solve problems.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting. Well, I think more to come on that. Ryan, I'd love to hear you comment. We're still kind of a little bit national but local, but talk about Senator Mitt Romney in the U.S. Senate race, his seat. We have, you know, it's time to make the decision in some ways, at least on the Republican side. And you've got lots of people campaigning. The Eagle Forum hosted a debate. You know, I watched some of the, listened to some of the news coverage about it. I guess John Curtis wasn't there. So that makes sense a little bit to me. But we had some of our others there. How are you seeing that race? I mean, it's our former Speaker Wilson. It's our Senator Mike Kennedy. What are you seeing?
Well, Kennedy's in the third congressional district race now.
Yeah.
Yes, he ran for that last time. You have Speaker Wilson and, you know, Mayor Staggs that we talked about last time. And there's a handful of others that are also in that race. You know, honestly, I have no idea. People keep asking me to handicap the thing. I think there's a handful of them, speaking of, that are already going to be in the primary. Right, we know that they've turned him in. I think Curtis has got his in. Wilson's got his in.
Is Trent going convention only?
Trent's going convention only, as far as I understand.
Yeah.
Carolyn Fippen's convention only, as far as I understand. And you know, the convention itself is going to come up here within a few weeks, and we're going to have an answer. And that might be, you know, we get a sense of that. But we've seen this over and over too. You know, Kennedy won the convention 6 years ago. And then he was up against Senator Romney in the primary, and he's been Senator Romney for 6 years. So whoever wins that is one story. I don't know how to tell you the answer to handicap it. I think, you know, traditionally one of the more popular options at a convention is somebody that goes convention only.
Shireen, did you see that our other co-host, John Dougal, got his signatures turned in, apparently?
I did see this. So I'm not exactly sure when the deadline is, but I think it has passed, but the numbers are kind of still coming in. So you can go, if you're interested in who is qualified going the signature route for ballots, you can search elections.utah.gov, and if you just put in signatures, it'll take you to that page. So you can kind of see who's already going to be there.
Yeah. You know, about a minute and a half in this segment. Let's close out, and I'll go to you first, Shireen. Ryan, we'll see if you want to say some things, but let's talk about former Mayor Ted Wilson, who passed away this past week.
Yeah. So condolences to, you know, the family, and just really want to share some of the experiences that I had with Ted Wilson, which I really got to know Ted when I ran for Congress in 2018 at the same time that Jenny Wilson was running for U.S. Senate. And so sometimes when you can't be multiple places at once, you send a surrogate. And often I would end up in a, you know, a school gym in St. George or out in a park in some corner of the state, and honestly have just so many fond memories of how warm, how deeply he cared about Utahns, how well he knew this state, what a passion he had for the environment, for the outdoors.
Really likable person.
Really likable person. And just also how proud he was of Jenny jumping into that Senate race. So Mayor Wilson, County Mayor Wilson, running for in that Senate race. And what a lovely human being, and I'm so grateful for his service to the state.
Yeah, I love it. Ryan, we have about 30 seconds, but you've had some experiences with
Mayor Wilson, and I'll say this. You made me think of the first time I met him, and it was when I was an intern on the Hill, and, you know, somebody's a former mayor, and at the time he was working as an advisor to Governor Huntsman, and had no need to build a relationship with me or to be extra kind to me or anything else. And certainly a lot of politicians weren't super kind to interns, but Ted always was. And I just shared a few minutes ago, this last session when he was on the Hill, and, you know, they had honored him in the Senate, and I found him in the basement and we were walking past each other. He still remembered me and made sure to stop and say hello, and just what a wonderful man. And, a really sad day.
Yeah. Statesman, you know, we talk about people as being all American or Renaissance man. He kind of was all Utah.
Yeah. He's super helpful on transportation things. We were working on. He was awesome.
Yeah.
He was,
I love it. Yeah. Condolences to the family. Stay with us. I'm with Shereen Gourbani and Ryan Wilcox.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shereen Gourbani on the left.
Ryan Wilcox on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Shereen and Ryan, I am thinking about all the things important happening this week. We had Tim Shriver, an Impact Scholar from the University of Utah in town. Of course, he's the grandson, of President Kennedy.
Yes.
Then we have, we had the ambassador from Ukraine in town. Mm. But we also had the International Organizing Committee delegation. Wow. I saw them on State Street come walking into an event, and I got to tell you, they have presence. They look international. They speak international.
Yeah.
They usually are wearing branded clothing. I don't know. Do any of you have any interaction with them?
I did not, but I did watch some of this from a distance, and a couple things stood out to me in the commentary, and I'd love to hear some of your reactions on this, but I'm not sure who it was, but somebody who was here when the original bid was happening and then was back and said, you know, I haven't been back in the 20 years since, and to see the just absolute change, and mentioned walking around on a Sunday and feeling like a little bit of a ghost town. And I think now if you walk around, especially downtown Salt Lake on a Sunday, it's vibrant. People are out for brunch. People are walking around, exercising. More people live downtown, right? Just the sense of vibrancy, the infrastructure, so much more investment. And he was just like, it felt like you were in the original bid sort of saying, we think Salt Lake can do this. And now you're like, we're ready to go. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you felt that.
Yeah, I got to meet this guy. Yeah. I know who this was. I think his name is Christoph Duby, but he's
that sounds right.
Yeah, he is the executive director of the IOC. So his opinion really matters, and super interesting. I think he's Swiss. Yeah, I met an Austrian player and a Swiss player. I mean, you know, in the game. But Ryan, it's such a big deal to project this state on that big of a global stage. They were quoting that there were 2 billion, you know, viewers during the games of this city. They think it'll be closer to 6 by the time we host it again.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, no, that was to say it was a game changer is like the massive, largest understatement we could ever say. But really, it speaks to the vision of those who thought it even at the beginning. So some of the feedback that I've heard is, you know, obviously we didn't have tracks when they started having these conversations with them. Salt Lake City skyline is dramatically different than it was then. And not just the immediate downtown stuff. The fact that this is also unique, that I've heard is the fact that we've maintained the venues and kept them not just up, but they're in use year round. That they're honestly, the ski team still trains here. The Oval is constantly in use down in Kearns. You know, all of these venues that so many other cities, even like you think of how long ago was it that we had the Olympics in Russia, the Winter Olympics?
Oh yeah,
they completely devastated all those all those venues. So because we've taken care of them, we have this massive leg up.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
So something for our listeners, maybe they know this, maybe we've mentioned it, but it's really interesting. So we're the preferred choice, and we're the only person that's on the list right now for 2034, but we don't know for sure until this summer. And they have picked,
the ink is dry.
Yeah, and they picked July 24th to finalize this announcement. Super interesting because of the time difference and everything. It'll be at 3 a.m. Utah time.
Oh, wow. So we'll know.
On the 24th, that's what I'm trying to cue on. And think of the party, because we'll have people sleeping out, you know, along the parade route.
Yep.
You have all the parade people there, which gives you a ready downtown audience at 3 a.m. I think it's going to be one of the biggest days in state history, actually.
Yeah.
Because you've already got this convening going on.
It's going to be fun.
Oh, wow.
Okay, hockey.
What's happening?
Since we're in
hockey?
Winter sports,
National
Hockey League.
We had a big dive into baseball.
Ryan, you want to give us set that one up?
Yeah, well, you know, Arizona is a little bit of a mess.
Okay.
In different areas,
yeah, that's right.
Now, different ways, cross topics. I'm sorry for my friends in Arizona. So, Phoenix Coyotes, if you haven't heard, I've been struggling for a long time, and both with, you know, their venue, with attendance.
Uptake, yeah. My understanding is they play in a 5,000 seat arena that they are not selling out.
On a college campus.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ownership's had problems. They've been forced to sell a couple times. So you have that situation there. You have like literally the host of the Winter Olympics just to the north with the greatest snow on earth in the shadow of the Wasatch Mountains. With a bid here, it's beyond the natural fit. The league believes that. Right now, the official line is that they've prepared this week two versions of the schedule for this fall, not for like 2 years from now or 5 years from now, but two versions of the schedule. One that has Phoenix on the agenda for everybody to go play, and the other one that has Salt Lake City. So I think we're looking at weeks for a decision there, because they're going to have to, because in order to pull it off, you're going to have a few months to get the thing ready.
Yeah. So I went to a hockey college. I went to a Division I hockey college in Minnesota, St. Cloud State University, known for heavy drinking and hockey. So this school, I have to say, if you have never seen a live hockey game, seeing it play at that level, and I have not been to an NHL game, but even just Division I hockey at my school, it is so exciting. It's a wonderful sport.
Oh, yeah.
And I would just really say, if we get this and you've never seen a game, and I know it's not accessible to everybody, but try if you can to come down and see a game. And here's the question I have. Do they keep the name? Do we get a new name?
Is it
the
Coyotes? Absolutely, a new name.
New name.
And
no
I
way.
Knew you'd be thinking about that, because my next question was going to be to you, Shireen. So I want to tell you the name that I love.
Okay, tell me.
And you can think of a bunch. Mountaineers, you know. I mean, you can do some different animals. We've got to change the name. It won't be Coyotes. But they've been using the Utah Yetis.
I know. There's all sorts of designs that are
Abominable
out there on the internet.
Snowman, you know, snow, hockey.
Yeah.
Four letters.
I like it.
Do you like it? I think it has Ryan Smith written all over it.
The only thing that I worry about is that the Avalanche next door, the Colorado Avalanche, which is one of the more recent expansion franchises. Also, if you look at the side of their jersey, it has a giant Sasquatch foot.
Yeah.
Right? So it's already sort of branded with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't know that. That's pretty interesting. All right. Coming back to sort of what's happening in town this week, the governor has what he calls a One Utah Summit. It's a big economic summit put on by the governor's Office of Economic Opportunity. They have a lot of heavy hitters that come to that and share. The IOC was there. The governor spoke. Governor spoke from his heart about what the first family's been going through with Abby Cox's back troubles and problems with the disc in her neck. Is that right, Ryan?
Yeah,
I know these are personal things and whatnot, but the governor was public about it today in a public setting. And it was really beautiful to hear him describe when she was sick many, many years ago in Fairview and the attention she got. And now she's first lady and the attention is the same.
Yeah.
I thought that was really touching.
So one of the things that I love about Governor Cox is his ability and willingness to go into difficult conversations. Generally speaking, and nobody wants to violate HIPAA, of all things. Like, nobody wants to talk about their personal struggles. And, you know, sometimes when you're in that kind of a public space, there's just no way to do it. And he's learned, I think, pretty quickly, pretty intuitively, that sometimes the best way to lead is just to be honest about what is happening, because that is also happening in everyone else's lives of the people you're leading. So, yeah, very, very honest, very raw. His schedule was cleared the last 2 days completely. So we all sort of covered for him everywhere.
Yeah. I think he even missed some things with the IOC, which shows how serious that is.
He missed the Florida delegation from school security the other day. He missed his own meeting with John McEnroe and the sports commission and, you know, all of those things. His staff has been working crazy hard to do that. And of course, Lieutenant Governor Henderson has been pitch hitting like no one else since this. But again, that to his point in the story, that's the best of Utah. When stuff like that happens, we step up and we fill in and we make it work.
I totally agree. Shereen, do you want to say anything about this?
I just want to say, really wishing her the best and the family. I'm certain it's incredibly stressful. And for me, I think the thing that comes up is just the safety and security that people experience when they have access to healthcare.
Yeah. Let's do another safety thing. We wanted to talk about last week, didn't have the chance. School safety. You know a lot about that, Ryan. I know very little, but you... Well, set it up, and then Shereen and I will comment. You play like you're trying to get something out of us, the middle and the left.
Yeah. This is a hard topic, but it really started about 2 years ago in May of 22 after the Robb Elementary disaster down in Texas. And having really blunt, difficult conversations with my own superintendent. And I serve on his foundation board, right? Like I go in, hey, where are we? What does this look like? And then across the state, we received about 7,000 different inquiries, phone calls, emails, all the things to districts, to legislators, to the state, to the governor's office, asking the same question. And so...
And is the question, are we safe? What are we doing?
It.
What's the response?
Yeah. And I'm not sure why this one in particular resonated like it did in Utah. Maybe it's because it was an elementary school and it was in the West. But it felt
and
different.
Horrifying because of the wait time. It looked like there was...
Absolutely. And for law enforcement, it was a total disaster.
Yes.
None of them followed the training that that we know they were supposed to be doing and everything we've learned since Columbine, right? But that really, it started out with those questions, and we had a list of things. And I knew within a couple of months, they were too big. We needed massive cultural changes in education, how we approach this, what do we look at it, and really the recognition, both financially and in reality, that these children are our most precious assets, if you call it that, or, you know, inputs.
What could possibly be more important?
Nothing.
What could possibly?
Nothing. Nothing. And yet, you know, that's been the big fight for the last 2 years. We dedicated all of last year with it. We created the School Security Task Force. We dedicated all of that time to studying this as much as we possibly could. We went into the places where you don't ever want to see, including walking the halls and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas in Parkland with the parents of the children whose blood is still on the floor and the walls, down to Uvalde, over to Covenant School in Tennessee, and really just trying to understand everything we possibly could to learn those lessons without having to go through the pain that they did. And that's what you've seen in the legislation that's come out. It is painful for education. It is painful to try to make that kind of a change, but it's happening. And we've had enough of those hard conversations that now the questions are, all right, how do we get there?
Yeah. Shereen, react to that.
I mean, every fall that I send my elementary school kid to school, I think about this, right?
Yeah.
And to understand the multifaceted approach that needs to happen for us to be prepared, address, you know, what I believe is fundamentally a problem around maybe major institutions, including how we think about access to guns, mental health care, behavioral health interventions for people, isolation, bullying, all of it, all the way down to school safety and security. I'm so grateful this work is happening in our state. I'm sure you see it as just a part of the puzzle as well. But man, just thinking about Robb Elementary throws me into a rage. Like, it really does. And part of that is, you know, we put people in impossible situations over and over again and ask them to make right decisions. That's difficult. Yeah. But we need investments, safety, and security in our schools as part of that.
We just have, you know, maybe a minute or so left in the program, but just because I feel like I should say it, I want to go even beyond safety and recognize that we need to talk more about our schools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was sharing data with business leaders this week about the racial and ethnic disparities by educational attainment. 15% of our state Hispanic. One in four are at proficiency levels in reading. One in five in math.
One
for the Hispanic.
In four, one in five.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's about one in two for the. I mean, it's not great anywhere, but it is a recipe for intergenerational poverty, yeah. Lack of economic success, and the like, if we don't solve these disparities. And there's disparities by socioeconomic, too. They're both.
Yep.
That tracks with all of the metrics. So we talk about the safety metrics. Those same populations are dramatically more cases of violence. And again, it's that depressive mindset, right? You have people that are hurting economically. They're also likely hurting in other areas. And when they can't feel safe going to somewhere like a school, they're not going to be focused on reading at all.
Well, so in future conversations, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our kids.
Yeah.
All right. Wonderful. Great conversation with Ryan Wilcox, Shireen Gorbani. I'm Natalie Gochner. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening, everyone.